Indeed, here I am. Good evening, everybody. Please, oh, please, oh, please. I'm getting so many requests. Write this down, if you would. And I'm not going to mention it again. It is the Pizza Punch site. It's artbellspizzapunch.com. That's ArtBells, plural, Art Bell's Pizza Punch, PIZZAPUNCH, all together, artbellspizzapunch.com. All right. I've got two guests coming up. We're going to talk about lucid dreaming and a lot more. Guest number one is Dominic Hadassani, a lucid dreamer and avid meditator since his mid-teens. Dominic Hadassani has been exploring the inner worlds for more than 30 years. His first spontaneous lucid dreams, he recalls, began at age 13 or 14. Since then, he's practiced yogic and Monroe Institute methods. You know about the Monroe Institute. In fact, I was honored to interview Mr. Monroe. Methods of reproducing border states of consciousness, as well as experimental work and shamanic inductions. He has been associated with the Lucidity Institute as a member for over 20 years now and has been on TLI staff for 7 years. At the Institute, he is a lucid dream training program facilitator, sometime experimental lab subject on the research side of the Institute's work. It's like a lab rat, I guess. His special interest lies in transitional states of consciousness, REM onset, and the wake-initiated lucid dreams, or WILDS, W-I-L-D-S, often associated with out-of-body perceptions. Now, out-of-body perceptions, that's an interesting phrase by itself. And then, Stephen LaBerge, PhD. You should know him or heard of him. He's a world-renowned authority on lucid dreaming. His pioneer studies at Stanford University have brought scientific attention to this potentially illuminating state of consciousness. Dr. LaBerge's recent research shows how the phenomena of lucid dreaming sheds light on the nature of consciousness, viewing consciousness as the dream of what happens, with perception and dreaming essentially different only by the presence or absence of sensory constraints. Through the years, his research team has developed highly effective techniques, including technological aids for building lucid dreaming skills. In addition, Stephen has had extensive personal experience with lucid dreaming, having learned to have lucid dreams at will. And among his thousands of lucid dreams are many which have been delightful, inspiring, enlightening, and life-changing. Thus, he is an unashamed advocate of lucid dreaming, believing that the world would be a better place if more people developed the art. His interest in the subject embraces science as well as spirituality, and he feels a special kinship with the Tibetan Buddhist tradition of dream yoga. Both of them are up next. Well, all right, we're radio, not television, so when we have two guests on the radio, we've got to learn to discern between their voices. Dominic Hadassani, let's hear your voice.
Good evening, Art. How are you?
That's very distinctive. I should have no problem recognizing that. Good evening to you, sir. And Stephen LaBerge, I understand, Stephen, you have a migraine headache.
No, that would be my worst. It's not that bad.
Right. Migraines are bad.
So far, well, they can be very bad, and it's in remission at the moment, but you know how those are. So, this might be a dream, or it might not.
All right, gentlemen, I guess we should begin really at the beginning. A lot of people have heard of lucid dreaming, but not all by a long shot have a slightest idea of what it really is. So, definitions, what is lucid dreaming?
I think I could put that simply enough. A lucid dream is simply a dream in which you know that you're dreaming while it's happening. So while you're in the midst of a dream, something has told you, maybe some oddity, or you've seen a UFO. Oh, my God, look, here they are, and this can't really be happening to me, or can it? You're not sure, but then you, let's say, float into the air, and you realize this has got to be a dream. And so once you know it's a dream, then you realize it's all in your mind, therefore anything is possible, and it opens up the possibility of dream control.
Yes, well, that's never happened to me, both of you. I have never, in the middle of a dream, said to myself, oh, this is a dream. Never.
How, well, that you remember, right? How often do you remember your dreams, Art?
Infrequently.
Yes. Yeah, so most people remember a dream only, say, every two or three times a week at the most. And so since we all dream every night, so in rapid eye movement sleep or REM sleep, we've got maybe in a 7 or 8 hour night, you've got perhaps as much as 2 hours of dreaming time, and the average person only remembers maybe 1% of that. So we have little idea what's going on every night, all the strange adventures. So tonight, Art, this, you know, when or tonight or tomorrow, whenever you get to sleep, why not simply notice that it's a dream? Wow, this is a dream. Anything could happen. See where you can take it.
Well, because it's never happened, so I don't know how, in the middle of a dream, to suddenly say, wow, I'm having a dream.
Well, you know, it is a learnable skill. Certainly, the place to start is with dream recall. You've got to increase your dream recall, which is something that you can. We believe that any normal person can do with training. It takes practice and the intention. So the first place to start is to say, I'm going to try to learn to remember my dreams, and I simply have to care about them. It sounds like you may have a busy enough life that you just haven't, you know, when you get around to bedtime, Art, you say, oh, forget anything else, I'm just sleeping. It takes some extra energy. You've got to have some focus and attention left over to go into sleep with an idea, something you want to carry out. You want to recognize that you're dreaming.
Actually, Stephen and Dominic, I must tell you, I prefer the little slice of death experience. In other words, when I go to sleep, I really prefer going to sleep. On the occasions where I have had dreams, they've been very intense, and when I awaken, I find that I actually still feel tired because I was so gosh darn busy in my dream.
Absolutely. Understood. See, the trouble is when you're in a dream and you don't know it's a dream, it takes a lot more work because you're trying to do things that just don't work out. It's very common that for most people, if they're not lucid, if they don't know they're dreaming, the typical kind of emotion that goes with the dream is a kind of a general irritation or...
That's right.
You know, it just doesn't make sense. But if you realize you're dreaming while you're dreaming, you say, anything's possible. I could have any imaginable dream. Now that opens up, the limits of your imagination. Dominic, would you like to just give a sense of why you find it worth your while to have lucid dreams? What do you do with them?
Sure. Before I go there, though, I might like to ask Art, you know, during the day, do you ever reflect on the fact that you're awake? I would guess. I'm going to put the answer out there that very few of us do.
I really don't. I mean, I'm very much aware of the fact that I'm awake, but I don't spend time
thinking about it. Right?
Thinking about it, no.
Yeah, so part of the beginning, I think, of the lucid dreaming exercise or practice is to become aware of what you're doing, whether it be awake or in a dream, and to reflect on it. So, you know, if we don't, during the day, occasionally step back and say, am I awake? Right? Do that reflective check. It's habitual not to actually say, you know, am I dreaming and is this really a dream? So part of the long-term practice is to do a double take once in a while and make sure that you are where you think you are. Because in the dream world, it's exactly the same. It's very hard to discriminate the difference between being awake and being asleep. Now, to answer the question that Stephen put out there, why do I like to lucid dream? Well, the first one is for the pure pleasure of it, to be able to do something that I always wanted to do or do something that I've done again, sort of like going into the Star Trek holodeck and dialing in just about an experience that I'd like to have.
So you two are kind of claiming that you can, once you're able to lucid dream, recognize the fact that you actually are dreaming, you can become the director and the script writer of your own dream.
Or if a script is presented, you can act within the script and make the choices, the conscious choices that you want to make in the scenes presented. And I'd say that's probably the more common version of a lucid dream, one where you go with the dream, you go with the flow, but you make decisions as to what you want to do with what the director behind you, the subconscious, is bringing forward.
Huh. So you're not claiming you're totally in control?
No, I'm saying you have two choices. One is, and the easier one is, a dream is presented. You realize that you're in the dream, you're lucid. You're riding your bicycle down the street, and all of a sudden it's sort of flying. Now, what would you like to do? Fly somewhere? So the dream has been presented to you, and you've decided to course correct, start writing the script, if you will, on your own.
That is being the director of your own dream.
It is something like that, Art. It's think about it. Are you completely in control of everything that happens in your waking life? Well, not really. It's more that you can respond flexibly to what comes your way and you make the best of it. In the dream state, it's very similar because your unconscious mind is always interacting with you no matter how lucid you are. You can't decide everything, and you wouldn't really want to. It's more like you find yourself in a completely vivid fantasy world that mostly runs itself, but then you can say, here, I've got choices. For example, people often start out in nightmares. There's some anxiety dream, something's frightening them. They're trying to escape from their anxieties, but they can then recognize that in the dream they can't hurt them. They can turn around, face their fears, work through it, befriend their inner monster somehow, and it ends up that you wake up feeling much better than you would have otherwise. So it's really, as Dominic said, that it's because the first reason for doing it is it feels good, it's fun, it's exciting, it's sort of it's the poor man's Tahiti, where you can go on your vacation on a night if you like, without any concerns of any dangers. It's really, you're free to do what you decide you really want to do.
And for me, the experience the day after, as opposed to a wrestling dream that was less lucid, I generally feel an afterglow of ecstasy or energy from just having the freedom and the enjoyment of involving myself in my own world.
Oh, I can clearly see how pleasurable it could be if you could have some effect on the course of your own dreams. I guess the first step would be recognizing that you're dreaming. And I just don't have, since I've never done it, I don't have a clue how I can achieve that state. How do I do it?
Right. First, in general, it's a learnable skill, so you have to. It takes some time to develop, but the essence of it is very simple. It's remembering to do something later tonight. So, for example, you could decide, I'm going to ask about out-of-body experiences in not this segment, but the next one, right? You could set your mind to it and say, I'm going to ask, what's the connection between out-of-body experiences and lucid dreams?
So I am going to ask about that.
Okay, so to do that, you set your intentional memory, your memory for the future, what you're going to do later. It's the same thing exactly with the dreaming. As you say, tonight when I'm dreaming, I want to notice that it's a dream. And so it's the same principle precisely. So although you've never done it before because it never occurred to you, or you simply haven't remembered the dreams in which you have been lucid.
You know what? You're absolutely right. For example, this is even bothersome to me. If I know that tomorrow at 9:30 a.m., which is a very early time for me, I have to get up and, take my wife to the doctor for her checkup. My body, absolutely, at the exact time that I want to wake up, will wake up after I've set alarm after alarm to make sure I get up. I don't need it. I automatically wake up, so that part works.
Your brain is still functioning when you're asleep, of course. And actually, although you're not remembering it, you are conscious, for several hours during the night when you're having all kinds of extraordinary adventures, some of which maybe, of course, as you wake up from and find it even disturbing. But you're conscious during that period of time. And most people, when they do remember a dream every couple of days, say, there I was having whatever the unusual experience was. The fact that dreams are somewhat different in terms of content, what goes on in them, they change more than the waking state, is the way you can tell that it's a dream, when impossible things happen. Now, I suspect for Art Bell, it's harder to distinguish what's going to be an impossible thing. And the example I gave of there comes a flying saucer, well, or maybe it's not a dream, who knows? But you've got to learn to ask the question, how do I know whether I'm dreaming or not? Then there are methods, for example, looking at a digital watch, looking away, looking back again, this checking time or rereading changes in a dream. So if you were dreaming, it would change when you looked back at your watch the second time. It wouldn't be just a few seconds later. It wouldn't even say anything like it. It would tell you that you're dreaming now.
Okay. Here's a question I would love to have answered. It sounds like you might have studied it. I think we all know, I certainly know, that when I have a really cool dream, one that I really enjoyed or impacted me for some reason in a large way, I have to write it down. And if I don't write down what the dream was about, within, an hour at the very most, and much less time, really.
Yeah, seconds. Yeah.
It's gone. It's mm-hmm. just gone. And it was, at the time, a gigantic impact for me. And I said, I'm going to remember this. And unless I write it down, it's gone.
So why are dreams hard to remember? Why are they
easy
to forget? I think the answer to that is clear if you think in terms of evolution. Because dreams seem so real, dreaming, first of all, has been going on ever since mammals invented it 140 million years ago. So it's only humans that talk about dreams and can actually tell the difference between an experience that happens in the waking state for real, and one that happens in the dream. They seem so much alike. So imagine a cat, for example, having a dream of, let's say the dog next door is dead, right? And it's the wish fulfillment dream, and that there's a family of mice has moved in next door. So that cat wakes up and says, and remembers his dream, but doesn't think it's a dream instead. Jumps over the fence to eat the mice and gets eaten by the dog instead, and so doesn't pass on genes for remembering dreams. So you see, the idea is that because of the confusability of dreams and waking, evolution has made it difficult to remember them, because otherwise it would be very maladaptive if you couldn't tell what a dream was. Now, humans can take those fleeting memory images and then convert them into stories. And we say, what was going on there? And we then have a story. The story is what we can remember later. But the dream itself, the experience that we wake up with, is very fleeting, very easy to forget.
Oh, that's so interesting, though. You say that I have cats. I have three cats. So
yes.
I've watched my cats dream.
Yes.
And you can see their little paws running. You can see their little mouths going as though they're eating something or whatever, mm-hmm. and you're telling me that they are unable to discern between a dream and reality.
Well, we presume that the dreams of the cat are like the lives of the cat. They experience the dogs and cats and bats and whales and all of these. All mammals have dreams, or at least we know they have REM sleep, and we presume if you do as I do, that something's going on in that creature. So if you got cats, you know that the cats have a life, right? They have an inner experience.
Yes.
So why not dream? But how would they know the difference? I mean, people talk about experience and say, like you must have said when you were a child, "Mommy, there's a bear in the closet," and no, dear, it's just a dream. Well, I don't care what it is, it's going to get me, right?
That's right.
No, she said, it's just in your head. It didn't really happen. And after a while, you learn that there's a difference, that these strange things that happen in the middle of the night aren't the same as the other things that happen the rest of your life. And we learn to make a distinction because people talk about experiences. That's how we know that dreams are different from waking life. It's because
all right, but in the case of a cat, for example, it would depend on what a cat's state of consciousness really is, and I'm not sure we know that for sure, do we?
No, we really don't know at all what the state of consciousness of the cat is, but we do know that cats don't talk in words about experience. So they don't have a word for a dream. So they know what, food is and what a dog is and what people are and all these things, but they don't have words for them. And so they have the concept dream, which is very abstract, actually.
I've never seen a cat continue to chase what it had in its dream. So maybe they do discern. I don't know. Gentlemen, hold on. We'll be right back. We're talking about lucid dreaming and more in a moment. Two powerful names in lucid dreaming, Dominic Ottozzani and Stephen LaBerge. And I'm sure that the majority of you out there are very much like myself. I've never, ever been in control of one of my own dreams, but I certainly would love to be. And these gentlemen seem to be saying it's nothing more than intent. If you develop the intent to be in control of your own dreams, so it shall be. They're back in a moment. Well, all right, Karen in Murphy, North Carolina said, my cat G dreams, and she'll often cry like she's lost. Wake up, look around, see me sigh, as if to say, thank God, it's just a dream, then go back to sleep. So I very much believe cats know that dreams are only dreams, and she doesn't keep chasing a dream beast. Be that as it may, I would love to be in control to some degree of my own dreams. And if that really is possible, and apparently it certainly is, so many people say so, including my two guests, I want to know how to do it. And I guess the way is just intention. In other words, before I go to sleep, I tell myself when I'm dreaming, I'm going to become aware that it's just a dream. In other words, develop the intention to do it. Is that correct?
That's right, Art. I just like to say, though, that in addition to the testimony, as you say, of the guests, we have scientific evidence that lucid dreaming really happens. Because you're right to be skeptical, because it's really so remarkable. Say, it's hard to believe that it's actually possible. But you know, we have years ago in the laboratory at Stanford, we proved that lucid dreaming absolutely happens by having people in the midst of their lucid dreams make a signal to communicate to the laboratory while it's happening. Just by looking left, right, this comes through on the polygraph record saying it's like a message from the other world. And so it's been proven scientifically that dream control, lucid dreaming is certainly possible. It happens in genuine REM sleep. So the whole challenge is really learning how to do it.
Art, let me give perhaps yourself and your guests a little technique maybe just to get a taste of what lucid dreaming might be like.
Sure.
We said earlier that you really have to recall your dreams to recognize whether you had a lucid or even a non-lucid dream. So one of the first techniques we teach during some of our programs is the morning technique. This requires that you kind of set the alarm clock aside, maybe on a weekend, and decide the next morning you're going to try to sleep in and enjoy yourself. But as you wake up in the morning, you try to catch your last dream. As you're waking up, instead of rolling over and hitting the alarm clock, as soon as you think you're awakening, don't move a muscle and try to recall the last thought or the last image. Oftentimes, people can throw out those little grappling hooks and grab the last dream. Now,
really?
Physiologically, this is the densest part of REM sleep and your longest REM period, so you have the best chance of catching a vivid dream. Oftentimes, you can transition back into the dream, pull back fragments back into waking reality, and sort of build up the dream. As you transition back and forth, oftentimes you can remember where you were in your bed. Uh-oh, no, you were in that red car in Hawaii. Oh, back in bed. Uh-oh, back in the car. And there was a gorgeous girl sitting next to you, or a gorgeous guy. Back to the bed. And you transition back and forth, and you can watch your consciousness shift back and forth between quote-unquote being almost awake or back in the dream.
That's amazing.
It's an excellent technique to start recalling your dreams and, as you said later or earlier, to write them down when you wake up, right? So I agree with you 100%, pen and pencil by the bedside. But the most important thing to remember is not to move a muscle, because as you start to wake up and break that paralysis that occurs during REM sleep, that's when those fleeting images start to move away. You break the state, and we believe that memories from dreamland are state dependent.
Okay. All right, gentlemen, what are there any practical applications for developing this ability?
Well, that
other than entertainment,
right.
You know, entertaining yourself.
Of course, that's sort of the lowest common denominator. That's the place you'd start. There's maybe another four general areas that people have reported, you know, described, gotten maybe 20,000 letters from lucid dreamers over the years describing different activities they do in the lucid dream. So just to enumerate general areas, there's rehearsal for living, really trying out as a kind of a flight simulator for life. Dominic mentioned the Star Trek holodeck idea that you've got a virtual reality, as it were, where you can practice things. So people have overcome performance anxiety, phobias of some kinds. They say they have, in any case. Creative problem solving is another area. The idea that dreaming has long been the source of creativity in art, science, business, many different areas. Lucid dreaming allows people to deliberately use that creativity of the dream state. Say another area would be overcoming nightmares, the personal development, generally speaking, the healing dream. Our scientific research that we might have a little time to get into found very strong mind-body relationships during the dream state. During lucid dreaming, if you dream.
So you're saying you can actually heal yourself in a dream or with dreaming?
Well, what we know is that if you do something in your dream to your brain, it's as if you're actually doing it. Now, and some people have described healing behaviors of some kind, and that's something that we only have anecdotal support. We don't have experimental evidence for that, but we do know the strong mind-body connection during the dream state.
Well, so, and yes, surely there's emotional healing as well, right?
Absolutely. Well, healing means wholeness in one of its root meanings. And so the idea of the mental health application of lucid dreaming, of being able to overcome nightmares and to work through fears, and the personal development, what we call integration or becoming one, is one of the most important applications. The idea that actually the Tibetan Buddhists have been practicing a yoga of the dream state for the past 1,000 years as a spiritual practice, as a means of waking up to the nature of reality, I think it's one of the deepest, most important applications of lucid dreaming. Strangely enough, they believe that the after-death state is an analogy to the lucid dreaming state, that we can, if we learn to wake up in our dreams in this life, we can wake up at death. Now, of course, that's something that we'll all perhaps find out one day, but we don't really have evidence for it right now. But there are many potential applications of lucid dreaming. It's sort of the idea of what would you like to do with life? And what you're going to want to do with it depends on what you want to do with life, and there are many different ideas. And lucid dreaming is essentially another world where you've got more time to live, in a world where the rules are different, where you can do the impossible. So it's really a different, it's more life in a freer form.
Okay. Well, here's one that, again, it's not a dream, but it certainly has happened to me many times. All my life, I've been in electronics. Now, as an example, I would be working on some piece of electronics, and I would work on it all day and well into the night until I was so tired and so aggravated and not solving the problem that I threw up. Well, I got very angry many times. And then I would go off to bed in complete depression, thinking about the problem. Now, I'm not claiming that I have a dream that solves this problem for me, but what I am going to tell you is that on so many occasions, I have awakened the next morning, and as soon as the cobwebs cleared, or even perhaps prior to all the cobwebs clearing, I knew the answer to my problem, went in the other room, replaced a resistor or a capacitor, and boom, it was fixed.
Yeah.
My brain came up with the solution during sleep.
Exactly. And that's quite common for creative individuals. That's what you hear, the same story again and again. And people who remember their dreams better will then sometimes have recollection of a very specific dream that was related to the problem solving. But the brain continues to work to do its whatever matters to you, whatever your current concerns are, will continue to be worked on while you're sleeping. So lucid dreaming is one application of, say, optimizing what you're doing in the sleeping state. But you've just given another example of another creative way of using your sleeping brain.
One of the things also to remember is that during REM sleep, during dream sleep, your brain is very activated. It's just as much awake as you are right now, except the body's paralyzed and you're in a different reality, if you will, of the mind. But your neurons are firing very quickly and you are thinking throughout the dream experience. So it's quite common that people will solve problems right there in the dream set.
So if I'd been able to remember it, you're saying that I did have a dream about whatever problem I was trying to solve, and in that dream, I figured it out.
Well, that's one possibility, Art. We don't know for sure that, because there are other ways of unconsciously solving problems, of course. Your brain was still working on it. That's clear. That's why next morning, all became clear. But Dominic's point about the brain being activated very much like it is when it's awake is a very important and subtle point. It's that when we're dreaming, our brain is involved in the same world simulation or world construction that we do while we're awake. And it's hard to believe because you say, I look out right now and I see the room around me. I think that the reality is out there. But if I were dreaming now and I would have a similar experience, I'd open, look around and I'd see a dream world that would look just as vividly real as the one that I experienced while awake. So what does that say? That says that somehow the brain's world simulation or consciousness is inside us. That's what the brain is doing. It's not, the reality is not outside, it's inside. So that creativity, that ability to change our reality is so obviously within us. We can experience that very directly in the lucid dream state.
And that's sometimes why it's so tricky to distinguish that you're frankly in a dream. When dreaming, you often think you're awake in the dream, but you're not lucid. You sort of stumble through and say, here's my dream car. I have to go to dream work. See my dream boss. But
all right. How did you gentlemen begin to be able to recognize that you were actually in a dream? Because it seems to me what you're doing is you're mixing your conscious with your unconscious, right?
Yeah. So for me, my very earliest experiences back in my teens were usually strikingly different experiences of reality. In those days, I would wake up in my dream flying over the bay in Long Island, New York, where I grew up.
I love those.
It was an ecstatic feeling, almost sexual, of flying and ecstasy, the sun, the water, too real to be real. And since I didn't have wings, it sort of dawned on me something was up with this, that I didn't have a plane underneath me and I was flying. At that point, the big difference, I all of a sudden knew that I wasn't in a real place. And then I tried to do something different. Fly left, fly right, try going close to the water, go visit a friend. So for oftentimes people, their first lucid dreams are these unusual body sensation dreams. Floating and flying are extremely common.
I love flying dreams. I don't have enough of them. Is there a way to actually, set up a dry? I'd love to have more flying dreams.
This is my favorite one, and I'll tell you, the way I used to incubate my early lucid dreams, I didn't know how to do this until I later met Stephen, but I recall what I used to do, which was to go skiing, which is a sport I enjoy a lot. I would take a 10-hour bus ride to Lake Placid, New York. I would be deprived of sleep. And I would ski all day. I mean, at the end of the day, I would go home, and I hadn't worn sunglasses. So I would lie down on my bed, physically exhausted, and I could just close my eyes and see the slopes and remember the sensation of flying down the slopes in a rhythm, parallel skiing, and sort of that ecstasy of flying down on skis. And as I drifted off into sleep, oftentimes I would have a flying dream just after that. Now, I've heard people talk about soaring, ballet, swimming, scuba diving, things that have this somatic sensation of floating, maybe even a hammock, in the evening, laying down in a hammock outside, swinging yourself back, and try to capture that somatic sensation and enjoy the pleasure and say, I want to feel this later. I want to do it. I'd love to dream like this, and try to incubate that physical sensation.
That's one approach, is the incubation of trying to reproduce the dream sensation. There's the easier way from the lucid dreaming point of view is to, number one, by whatever technique, the kind that we teach in our program in Hawaii, whatever technique you do, you become lucid. And they say, all right, this is a dream. I want to fly. So what do? You just leap into the air and fly. And why not? Because there isn't really any gravity in the dream world, and now you know you're dreaming, so nothing holds you down. And so you just float into the air, and that's one of the most amazing experiences of lucid dreaming, just to see that the rules that ordinarily hold you down in the waking world, there's strong evidence there's a thing called gravity, but why do you have to stay earthbound in your dreams? Well, it's simply because you don't know that you're dreaming, and therefore you think gravity is holding you down, but it's simply your mind holding you down. Right?
Wow.
So you just step in the air and float.
That really sounds good. That's kind of like the three or four steps and then the leap of Superman into the air, just like that.
Yes.
Now, I have interviewed over the years a lot of people on out-of-body experiences. And many of these people, gentlemen, maintain that the experience they have while out-of-body is real, it's verifiable, it can be proven. They can quote what people said and what people were doing. They were able to be in somebody else's bedroom or in the company of somebody else in another house somewhere else, and they could relate what that person was doing and then later verify that indeed that's what they were doing. Do you both believe that that is actually possible or not?
Well, if you put it that way, is it possible? I suppose it's possible, but in most experiences where most people, for example, in my book, in the lucid dreaming book, I've got a chapter called Dreaming, Illusion, and Reality. It's available free on the internet if you want to look at it. It describes Carlos Osis's experiments where he had, say, approximately 100 people who claimed to be able to do exactly as she described, to leave their bodies and go. Say, all right, come look at what's in the office here in the right? And what happened was that, say, of the 100 people, yes, we all saw it and reported what they saw, but only maybe two or three of them had a correspondence that for most of the rest, they thought they were there, but they weren't really. So my interpretation of that is say, well, sometimes a paranormal information transfer occurs in dreams. Sometimes people get information about what's going on in a remote location, like remote viewing. Perhaps Dominic can talk about that later. But what's happening is in all cases, it's a dream. So it's a dream that may be informed by some extra information or what you believe is going on. This is a complicated issue. We have laboratory studies showing that you're more likely to have the experience of leaving your body perceptually if you have a wake-initiated lucid dream, which is to say if your REM sleep is interrupted, so you were briefly awake, you may not know you're awake. I've had the experience myself, the out-of-body experience, and so has Dominic. It feels completely real, and if you don't check the reality fully, you may be confused and say, this can't be a dream. Dreams aren't real. This was real. Yet, when people have lucid dreams, they experience this feels as real can be, as anything. What do you say, Dominic?
Yeah, in fact, in some lucid dreams, hard walls are hard, or in other lucid dreams, you can put your hand through them. It really depends upon how much belief you invest in the dreamscape.
All right, but beyond just belief, have you two gentlemen run into hard evidence of people who say, look, I was in Chicago in somebody's house, and I heard them say such and such, and then have that person actually verify that indeed they did say that, and so that means the person really was there. Gentlemen, hold on. We're at a break point. We'll answer that when we get back. I'm Art Bell.